Hi, and welcome to She's the Boss Leaders, the podcast all about successful female founders and women doing amazing things in business from Australia and around the world. I'm your host, Jules Brooke, and this episode is sponsored by Brand for Brands, a branding agency run by two sisters located in Sydney. They specialize in building and refreshing brands that speak to the right people, the ones that will invest in your products and services. I hope you enjoy the episode. I have the most exciting guest, Angela Vithoulkas, who is the host and executive producer of SME TV. She was the founder of Eagle Waves Radio and still is. She was also the founder and still is of the Small Business Political Party, which is an independent party. She's been twice elected to the City of Sydney as a councillor, and she's a winner of so many awards, I can't even begin to tell you. You're going to have to go and look her up on LinkedIn. But thank you so much for coming, Angela. I'm really excited to be interviewing you today.
It's a pleasure to be here, Jules. I think you might be overestimating a few of those points there, but I find myself particularly not interesting.
Everybody says that to me. No, you are amazing. So let's go and explore your story. But let's start with, what is it that you're actually doing now? And why did you set it up? Let's start with that bit.
I'm concentrating full time now on SME TV. It's a new project. We're only a few months old. It's always been something that, particularly for me being a small business owner most of my life, I've always felt that small business owners really just didn't get or have a platform that would amplify what they do.
Right. I feel 100% the same as you.
Business owner wants to be the next Steve Jobs. That's not how we define ourselves.
We've got to have milk bars and hairdressers and window cleaners and gardeners and all sorts as well.
I wish we did still have milk bars.
Well, there's that. And the other thing is, of course, we're in lockdown right at the moment. So you may be able to get out and about in Sydney, but I am locked down for the X number of months or weeks that we've been doing it. But anyway, keep talking to me about what you're doing now with SME TV.
So we are still, I think people would still consider us in startup phase, but thankfully for us, or the silver lining was, we did launch exactly when COVID hit.
But on the other hand, everybody's stuck at home. So have you had a nice uplift in viewers because, they're all looking around for new things to watch?
Oh, I'm sure everybody online now would be experiencing the same challenge that we are. It's a noisy world now, even more so than before, simply because of the time that people have got, the massive unemployment that Australia's looking at, and people just trying to find or being open to work in whatever way they can, and dotting I's and crossing T's on what they hadn't done and sorting that out. True. So it's not been easy to cut through the noise, but if you stick to your game plan, and I'm all about planning, so I have a plan. I'm sticking to it. We tweak things as we go, like anyone else in a new phase of their business. But we're back in the studio now, quite active in our recordings and for our guests, because they also wanted to be back in the studio.
Zoom
not being ideal.
No, Zoom is not ideal, and, being locked down is not ideal. But, what you're doing with SME TV, and I remember you from running Eagle Waves Radio, so I know that you have been absolutely passionate and behind SME owners forever. Mm. And it kind of does my head in that there hasn't been SME TV like 10 or 15 years ago. So what you're doing is super important. I know that there are other people who are also setting up TV channels at the moment, but we've all got to hang in there. And the thing is that we now need lots and lots of content. So there's room for all of us. And I think the more that we focus on business, the more that people will realise that they can come to television as well, because the mainstream networks have been shit, to excuse my French, but they've been so bad at showcasing small business for years and years and years and years. It's perfect that you take the bull by the horns and start it yourself.
I think it's really important to note that mainstream media focuses on controversial politics. They'll do 20 shows a day on that. They'll also look at the big end of town because that's where the big dollars are, whether they're advertising or sponsors. And all they'll ever do is a couple of fluff pieces on small business if it's a tiny segment of a bigger deal. unless, of course, the small business owner's done something wrong, then we might make the
headline. Then they're right on it.
And they're
You're right. Of course, because they all, they just want clickbait. They don't want stuff that actually informs us or helps us. And I shouldn't diss it because that's a very broad brush kind of a comment, but I'm very frustrated at the moment. So I'm 100%
I'm happy to put my hand up and say that's how it is.
Okay, so now that you've set this up, I am very, very interested to know how Angela, as a little girl, has managed to do this journey to end up hosting your own TV show, and not only that, but also your own sort of TV network, because I wonder whether, as a little girl, whether you said one day when I grow up, I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to start a political party and I'm going to have a TV show. So how has it all happened? Can you take me right back and take me on that journey?
I don't believe I said anything like that as a very young child, but I'll preface that by saying that once I started to get politically involved, my cousin did some deep dive background ancestry tracing, and it turns out that the village that my mother's from in Greece has actually produced 5 American senators in the last 200 years.
So it's kind of in your blood, in your background anyway, that you were going to get on politically agitated.
Without realising it, But I think I've always been someone that was always going to be involved in customer service of some kind, and that's what politics is if you boil it down, if you really are doing a job, and that's what everything else is that I've done. I mean, my mother had her own business while she was pregnant with me. She went into labor. She told me very sternly, apparently, while I was still in the womb, you've got to get through lunch. I haven't got time right now to go to the
hospital. I love your mum.
I waited patiently. I was 3 before I caught my first shoplifter. That was a normal part of my life.
So what was the business that your parents were running?
So my mum had a milk bar.
Okay.
When she was pregnant with me, and that's, you know, when she came home from the hospital, I was in a box under the counter. There was no daycare. We didn't have any family here. That's how I grew up. You know, my dad, the first thing he did was build me a box so I could reach the till.
Oh, how gorgeous. So how in heaven's name at 3 do you find a shoplifter?
Well, everyone else had taken their eye off the ball and I was the only one in the shop, and I understood when these strange three little boys came in and started taking the lollies off the counter and shoving them in their pocket. I knew that was wrong. I got a broom and I beat them up. As you would.
Oh, you're so funny. As you would. Of course you would when you're 3. So what happened?
My territory.
So what happened when you were 3 and a half onwards?
Well, my mother, I was dressed that day to go out, and my mother used to take a lot of time in my appearance. So I always had locks and they were nicely curled and styled, and I always wore frilly dresses, which is probably why I ended up being a tomboy. And she was just determined that I had shiny shoes and nice socks, and I had a little handbag even at 3. But I dropped all of that, grabbed a broom, smacked them. She came out from the back and looked at me and just went, yep, she's got potential. So I was in training.
Everything you say about your mum, I love. Have you got brothers and sisters?
I have one brother. He's a little bit older than me, only 11 months older, and he's my true partner in crime, because not long after that incident, we ran away from home together. He thought he was getting a raw deal. So he was just nearly 5 and I was over 4.
Well, you were bound for success.
Well, he just said, you know, there's better things for us, and off we went. And we've been business partners now for 30 years. We still talk.
I'm
to his eldest daughter. So we're more like twins than we are of anything else, even though he looks nothing like me at all.
Oh, that's beautiful. But your mother would have loved combing your long blonde locks. So
when she got fed up, she cut them off. So
oh, right. Well, again, you know, short hair was always very cool when I was younger. I remember just begging my mother to be able to have my hair cut because she was all into pigtails, and I was like, I want it short. And a page boy was the thing in those days where it was all curled under, quite revolting. Anyway, so take me a little bit further now from high school. So what did you do in high school, and what did you do when you finished?
Strangely enough, I never finished high school.
Oh, you're still there?
I'm a high school dropout. I was impatient to get on with being in business. I wanted to
follow. I'm not surprised, actually. With a background like that, I'm not surprised. So what year did you drop out and what did you do first?
I was 17 when I left. My father was as disappointed. I don't think he's ever been more disappointed in me when I left school. He hoped that I would be the first person in the family to go to university and get a degree of some kind because, for Greek parents, culturally, an education is everything. And the last thing he wanted to see was me following in what he thought were their terrible footsteps, a bad example being business owners. And I was like, I can't wait. I want to get in there. But he made my brother and I serve out an apprenticeship in the kitchen first. We were in hospitality, so I had to learn from the bottom, even though I was already doing lots of other duties, in and out all those
things. Sounds like he kind of wanted to punish you to an extent as well. And you can learn what it's like to be an uneducated person working.
He did, because for the first 2 years, the staff didn't know that we were his children.
Sorry, I shouldn't laugh, but I mean, I just love those kind of life lessons that parents do. And obviously it has stood you in good stead, and he must be incredibly proud now of what you're doing. But after starting off working in the kitchens and cleaning and stuff, what happened then?
Well, I struggled getting on with the head chef because the way that chefs are trained is to essentially be bullies. And I've always stood up for myself, but he used to always make me clean the big ovens because I was the smallest person and I could actually physically crawl into them and clean them. And, I'd go home at night with bits of chicken in my hair, and I was always horrified on how I ended up looking at the end of the day. And after a 2-year apprenticeship, my father said, "What's the first thing you're going to do?" And I said, "I'm firing the chef." And that's what I did. He will go down in history as the first staff member I ever fired.
So did you take over the business, and what kind of business was it? So was this a restaurant or catering or?
So, well, back in those days, you called them coffee lounges.
Okay. And it's certainly in Melbourne still we have the sort of coffee lounges for the Greek guys who sit around when they retire and they play their dominoes and they have their coffee and they talk for hours. I know there's quite a few in North Melbourne.
And that's so in those days, that's what it was. It was it was something that, had nothing like the cafe culture that we have now, obviously.
No.
And you were either in a coffee lounge or you're in a takeaway shop.
Right.
So that was the food industry.
Right. So what happened from there? How long did you spend there? Because that would be, I would have thought the old guys love sharing their expertise and their kind of anecdotes of the old country and of their lives. So there's lots to learn in that kind of an environment as well.
There is, but my parents were always big believers in throwing us in at the deep end and, wanting us to learn our own lessons, not by being abandoned, but because I think my parents realized that there was a lot more to know, and the only way you could learn that was to ask more questions or to practice and see. I designed my first coffee lounge when I was 21, never having designed or run any kind of project before, and Dad was happy to just stand back and watch it all fall apart around me while I learned how to fix everything at the same time. So completely having the support of my parents my entire life, I'm always the first to say that, in the most positive of ways. I mean, I guess you would call him the kind of person now who would say, fail fast, learn fast, you learn from failures. I personally don't deal well with negative feedback and failures. They are something I will always crawl into.
Maybe you won't have any more for the rest of your life. Who knows? But it is a great grounding. He's really a very smart man.
I would say, Mum was always overprotective and Dad was always the most lenient in, no, go. He couldn't wait for me to get my driver's license so he could never drive again. And Mum was, think Mum's still petrified. She's still a backseat driver even now. So it's just in the spirit of it. Now, look, that said, and I talk about my father so fondly, my mother in the family will always go down as being the true fearless business owner who, started businesses in a country where she couldn't speak the language. And if my father ever had a day in business, it was only ever because of my mother.
So that is amazing, isn't it? My mum ran my dad's business to a large extent, all the numbers side of it and managing all the, well, my dad was a doctor, so all the patients, but same sort of thing. And so, and I love it that your mum was such a great example for you and just said kind of go for it and all the rest of it. So your first business was at 21 and it was a coffee lounge, is that right?
Yes, and I was that kind of a generation that was full of vanity and ego and the very first major business that my brother and I were partners in was called Angelique's. I called it after myself, as you do when you are incredibly vain and, you know.
No, when you're young and you're starting out and it's your first business, I don't think it's that way at all.
I think it was the first and last time, Jules, that I ever wanted to put myself in front, which is rather ironic when you end up being in politics and your face is plastered on, you know, 30,000 posters around a city. It's that irony is never lost on me personally, because I hate photos of myself. I hate being at the front of anything. And yet everything that I have done in the last 15 years has been all about that.
Well, I 100% sympathize, because I don't want my face on stuff either. And I resisted it for a very, very long time. But in the end, you've got to get on and get things done. And if it means that you've got to have your face there, then you put your face there. So talk to me about how that all unraveled, or not unraveled, unrolled over the next year or few years, and take me through to why you decided to set up Eagle Waves Radio, for instance, or the SME Party. I don't know which came first.
So it's very much a situation where once you've been in business for a really long time, and we were very fortunate that our hard work paid off. So hospitality was always very kind to me and my family. It was something that we knew. We knew how to do it. We always considered hospitality a business. So we were never trendy. We were just consistent and hardworking, and slow and steady wins the race, in my opinion. It's easy to be a one-hit wonder, but it doesn't sign a lease. You can't take that to the bank. You can't borrow against it, and you certainly can't grow unless you understand what it is to run a business and how that is to succeed. And we got to the point where I was running several different cafes at once. We were growing the brand.
Hang on, stop then. Tell me, how did that happen? So you buy one and you started. How many did you end up with?
Over the years, I've 29.
No, 29.
Yeah. I mean, if you're on that, we buy and sell, we set up, we flick. We were always flippers until we settled. And that was when I think the mood in the economy was very much about building brands. Everyone was jumping on the bandwagon of franchising back then. Franchises were churning. They were, you know, popping up left, right and center. It was when Boost Juice, that kind of era, when they were really taking off in the franchise model.
Which is what, would that be 15 years ago, something like that?
Yeah, I would say that around the you know, 2002, 2003 era is where people outside of the industry started looking in and realizing what a great return hospitality was providing. Food and beverage was a high markup industry back then. It's not anymore, people note well.
No, that's well, it's not only that, but it's going, you know, who knows what's going to happen when we come out of,
Used to be recession-proof, Jules. Now we know that it's not COVID-proof.
No, which is just such a tragedy. But so 29 businesses.
Yeah.
Okay. So talk to me, you know, how did that end up with, I think I might start a radio station or I might start a radio show.
So the same, ironically, it's the same motivation that sort of set the benchmark moving forward for everything. Once you're immersed in business and you are growing and you are looking at a different way of doing business, and you look at growing a brand, which is entirely outside of the hospitality sphere that I had known and what I was doing, you start to realize that there's more. And as a person, you change. I certainly wasn't the same business owner, you know, at 21 that I was, you know, well and truly in my mid 30s about at that point.
And oh no, heaps
I wanted
of wisdom.
More. I wanted more. And, and the awards did that for me. So once we started winning a few awards, we won the Impossible Award, which was Telstra, and that changed a lot of things. It also showed me how unforgiving and unhelpful some women can be.
Well, we'll get to that because I'm going to talk, we'll talk a little bit about women that help or maybe don't help along the way. But so when you were in the hospitality business was when you started going for the awards, was that right?
Yeah, the first one was delivered by accident. It was a customer's choice award. We had no idea that customers had gone out of their way not only to nominate us but to vote. And
please
remember, there's no internet yet. So this is paper forms that people have had to go and fill out and recruit amongst themselves. It was my first taste of the movement.
You must have been so proud. That is amazing. For the people love you so much and your business so much that they would do that. Just fantastic.
The first time we ever identified that people saw us and the business. I thought we'd always been invisible up till then.
So tell me, what do awards do for you? Because I haven't won any yet. I don't even bother applying. What can they do for you?
They can change your life depending on the award and the result of that award. I've always been one to capitalize very quickly and take the view that this might be the best day in your life forever. What are you going to do with it? And for me, it was all about good PR. I was smart enough to know that you needed the right PR person to take you to the next level. It's the truth. You know, I've had bad PR, but I've had fantastic and enormously helpful PR. I think the best PR companies are the ones that nurture you along as well, not just, you know, say, right, turn up tomorrow for an interview. They changed the way I looked at myself. And I had, you know, when I nominated myself for the Telstra Award, I didn't wait for anyone else to do it.
Well done. Love that.
Determined to give it a go. I was never under any assumption that I would get anywhere in it, and I didn't tell anybody what I was doing because, you know, fear of failure is a horrible thing. But I got a phone call once I'd entered the award. And I thought it was Telstra doing a cold call sell.
So you hung up on them?
I did. I said, I don't want to buy it. And they called me like three more times. And I finally said, how did you get my number? And they rushed through really quickly to say, no, it's the Telstra Awards.
Because you wrote it on your application form. So was that the award that really made a huge difference for you?
Yes.
Right.
And it was when I realized that I was a business owner and a brand in my own right, not part of the business. It was that point that I separated myself physically and emotionally from the business.
Right. And so what happens next? So you've won this award. You had this huge business that you've walked away, well, not walked away from, but I guess you extricated yourself from that situation. So what does somebody do next who's been so driven and had so many businesses?
Well, I realized quickly that media only cares about you while you're a hot topic. You know, once you're not a hot topic, so eventually my awards were dimming in the past. I tried to do more media. I found I had I loved radio. I still love radio. I think the medium of audio is one of the most intimate ways you can communicate with someone. Feeding people is an intimate way. Of course, there's physical intimacy, but audio, when it's just you and a voice in your head or in your ears, people feel very, very connected.
And this was years before podcasts. So nowadays, I think we would all agree that it's fantastic. But in those days, radio was just kind of everywhere and you weren't really necessarily thinking about it.
You were only on the dial.
And you would listen. Well, I would always listen to it in the car whenever you're driving anywhere. That was my big radio thing. And I know a lot of people have it on in the background, particularly small business owners when they're working.
Well, I couldn't get a gig on mainstream radio because in order for women to have a show on mainstream radio, you had to come with the sponsor. So dollars opened the door. Men in radio were given a show and then the station would go find the sponsors. So never fails to amaze me how that. And that hasn't changed.
I was going to say it hasn't really changed. And my experience of my little experience of working with TV was it was very, very similar. So it's interesting that you say that. So what do you do next?
I started doing community radio. So I knew there was no money in it, but I started to do a weekly business show in the in Sydney in the Sutherland Shire, and that was a great grounding for me. And I was producing my own show there on a Monday night. It was a huge commitment. It was live. I love live. It's a bit like hospitality where it's in the moment and you either step up or you fail horribly and your humiliation is very public. So, you know, the first few episodes weren't my greatest moments in media history.
No, but you were learning. I mean, you were learning something completely new.
They don't teach you community radio. They stick you in a room and they go, there's the button, see ya.
And yeah, that's right. So what was the format of your show? Did you have guests on or what were you doing?
Yes, it was called Angela's Business Mix, going back a while.
Yeah.
That name again.
Yeah, there's that name. Don't forget it, everyone.
Yeah, it was a fantastic time. But what it showed me was that a community radio station, what they didn't have was someone who would run the business. So I was getting SMEs asking me, how can we sponsor the show? How can we advertise on the show? And I couldn't monetize it because it was community radio.
Right. Okay. So then you made the jump to commercial radio. Is that right?
Well, I said, how hard can it be to make your own radio station? I mean, it can't be that hard, right?
I don't know. Tell me, Angela, you're the one who did it.
Yeah, I seem to only discover things in life that are literally in the impossible column.
Right.
Set up my own digital radio station, so it was always online, which, again, 12 years ago, 14 years ago.
Highly unusual.
New concept. I was determined to do it live. I found a great cheap unit or office suite in Broadway, which is just near Central Station in Sydney, in a building that was, let's say, it's not falling apart but smelled really badly. I had no idea that there was a brothel next door to us. And
I was going to say, does that matter? But I guess there might be compromising noises coming through.
It does when you get more people knocking on your door of rather dubious-looking individuals who you think are your next guest, and you welcome them in and say,
no,
I'll be there in a moment.
And and when you come back, they go, why have you got your clothes on?
Well, you know, well, who something am I like seeing that today? And I'm like, me.
So Angela, that's great.
It was interesting. We spent a year, you know, fine-tuning the skills, getting the show formats right, improving the tech. Before I was, essentially at the heart of everything, a control freak, and we did some refurbishment on my main huge flagship cafe store, and part of my refurbishment was to build the radio booth in the cafe. So I built
it. Oh, I love it. That's a great idea.
Glass booth so I could, as the story goes, so I can interview people, watch the tables and the customers and the staff and make rude comments in the glass by saying, I serve that customer.
But that to me, and, you know, maybe I'm putting my PR hat on again, what a great story. Did you get publicity on the back of that? The fact that you had a radio station in a cafe about small business with small business people around you?
Turns out not many people care.
I wish I'd known you then. I would have helped you get that one up. But anyway, okay.
It was great. We were doing. I was producing 7 live shows a day. Live.
7 shows a day. Cool.
Live shows a day, and I only had one for myself. So there were 6 others. I had a great team of people who really supported me and busted their chops to get the best show they could get up. It was incredibly hard work. We did well, but at that point, podcasting was coming in,
right?
And live radio had then become too hard for me to keep going and to commercialize. So,
what a pity! Because I mean, I remember when I had my PR agency and we were specializing in small business. You were definitely one of the first people that we would go to say, you know, would you be interested in an interview? So once you stopped that, there was kind of nowhere to go.
That was, you know, that coincided at the same time as me getting into politics. So I couldn't run hospitality businesses and have all of those responsibilities as a small business owner and you have all of them and grow the brand and keep the business profitable and have a full-time political career.
I understand. So something has to give.
Yep.
So, wow, politics, I just love this whole story. So can you tell me how that all evolved?
Most of you in Melbourne, you have already had the ability as business owners to vote in local politics. So the City of Melbourne encourages business owners to register and vote. The City of Sydney had a clause that said business owners could vote at a council election, but they didn't encourage it. So I was approached. At that point, I'd been a business owner in the city for 24 years. And I never knew that I could vote as a business owner. No one told me.
Right.
And someone, a group of people came to me and said, you know, we're running at the next council election. We'd really like you to be a part of it. Have you thought about going into politics? And I'm like, nah. And, you know, did you know that you could vote? And I said, no, I didn't know. Why doesn't everyone know? And they were looking for business owners. But, Jules, I was getting involved on the premise that I was helping.
Right. So at this stage, it wasn't, I'm going to be a politician. I'm just going to support this because it's important and, that everyone knows.
And see what it's about.
Yeah.
You know, because I had, don't forget, I'm a high school dropout. I've never done any formal of anything. You know, I did a three-day MYOB course and they threw me out on day one because...
But who cares about really about qualifications? Once you're about 5 years out of school, it makes no difference. And you had 24 years of running businesses. I mean, you're much, much more qualified and experienced than I would say probably half of the other people that were thinking about it.
It depends which way you look at it. It depends.
That's the way I look at it. And I know that's the way you look at it.
Well, so. we had a meeting one day while we were getting ready for the elections and they had been trying for some time to recruit a high-profile lead candidate and they weren't doing very well. And then they turned around and looked at everyone that was in the room who were helping with the campaign and being not the lead candidates but other candidates further down on the ticket and saying, well, which one of you here wants to be the lead candidate? And everybody stepped back and I was the only person left. I did not step forward. I didn't step forward.
And you didn't step back.
I kind of literally looked around and went, what does that mean? And, you know, 3 days later, my face was on 20,000 posters put up around the city.
Oh, my God. So how did that feel? And what were you standing for? What was it that you guys were trying to change?
Well, the City of Sydney has never had an appetite for electing mainstream party politicians. It had an independent politician installed, which is still our current Lord Mayor, Clover Moore, and there was no business influence. So 500 businesses had voted in the previous council election 4 years before that in 2008. There are 60,000 small business owners in the City of Sydney, but the bureaucratic structure around it made it And that would need a five-hour interview to go into. It made it impossible for businesses to actually get registered and be able to vote. The system was set up to not do that. So that was the platform that I was getting in on, which was to change everything to make it easier for small businesses to have representation. I mean, the City of Sydney, you know, gets almost $400 million worth of rates from businesses and $70 million worth of rates from residents. And yet we had no representation.
Oh, I love the things that you say. Like what? And that is just so shocking, isn't it? Really? That's
yes,
mind-blowing to me.
Politics is not business. It is.
No, it's another world different. That I don't understand, that's for sure.
It's dirty, it's shallow, it's full of people who lie and manipulate. You know, and this isn't just because I was an outsider. They do it to themselves. You know, I'll always say that, you know, the Libs and Labor, they're young. That's how they treat it.
Well, you only need to really look at what's happened over the last 10 years in Australia where they just kick out people they don't like as our Prime Minister and put someone else in that we haven't voted for.
Correct. Although they will tell you vote for the party, not for the person.
Yeah, I know they say that, but I wish we could vote for the person sometimes.
The odds were stacked against me. The bookies didn't give me much. Nobody thought we could do it. I didn't think I could do it. I wasn't at no point in a political campaign, of which, again, I will stress, I have no idea how to do or what it meant. I certainly wasn't preparing an acceptance speech of any kind. But there you go. You know,
what? You won.
We took a seat off Fantastic. A politician who had it locked down for a long time and found myself in a situation where I have no idea how this works.
I know, but you know about business and you can watch what they're doing. And it happened twice, didn't it? You got elected twice.
Yes. The second time people have a greater expectation of what you're doing. It has taken me, though, 8 years to get the rules changed for businesses. So even in my second election, the rules still hadn't changed enough to have good small business representation voting. But thankfully, they have changed, and at next year's election, there will be a massive representation of small businesses that I think will change the balance of power, but I won't be there for that.
Okay. But now, one of the things that I've read about you was that you had a business that was somehow caught up in the light rail. Is it light rail or the tram system that's being put into Sydney, where they just say, okay, we're going to work on this for 6 months and it takes 2 years, and they just lock down whole streets so people can't get there? It wasn't that part of what it is that you were working on, or that you were talking out about?
Yes. So in Melbourne or in Victoria, you call them trams. In Sydney, we call them light rail.
Oh, they're the same thing. Right. Okay. Great. I've learned something.
And Sydney had trams back in the early 1900s, up until the 50s. They removed them, covered over the track lines, which they found when they were putting in light rail. They discovered them. Wasn't, you know, hard to we kept asking, you know, if we got rid of something all those years ago and only to bring it back, why bother? But it was an example of government infrastructure that went horribly wrong for them, and unfortunately thousands and thousands of businesses. It destroyed life.
Look, we had something similar in Victoria where they decided they'd put underpasses on the railway crossings, and it's closed down whole communities, like all the little shopping strips.
Yep.
And you just know when it's government that they say it's going to be 3 months or 6 months. You know it's going to blow out for longer. So it did destroy a lot of businesses down here as well. But you had it right in the heart of the city. We had it out in suburban areas.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter where any of these infrastructure projects happen, and that's what I've spent the last 4 years fighting, is multiple infrastructure projects that have impacted on small business owners on every level. And some of those levels are subbies that actually are part of those infrastructure projects that work for government, who are being ripped off by government or by the intermediaries of those big businesses in between. So there's corruption everywhere. There's people in positions of power taking advantage all the time of smaller people who have no power and no voice. And that will always be where my heart is. For justice. My father, who always used to accuse me all the time, you search for the right in a world that's incredibly wrong, and it will hurt you. And it does. It hurts. The search for justice never comes without a cost to the people who fight for it, or for the people they fight for.
Woof. So have you been thinking about maybe taking it into federal politics and going for prime minister, because I'd vote for you? have you had enough of politics?
That would mean joining a mainstream political party, and I would never give them the satisfaction. I asked the same question again 4 years ago, or, you know, why doesn't government care? You know, yes, I was elected locally, but I realised that to make big change for small business, it had to be at a state or federal level. I asked the golden Angela question again. Well, how hard can it be to set up your own political party? Honestly.
what did Angela answer to herself?
Well, she just did what she usually does, and just
off she goes.
Starts. And then realizes that in everything that I have ever done or tried or fought or gained, there is nothing as hard as setting up and maintaining a political party.
And I would believe you, and I know nothing about it either, but I can imagine that that is an uphill battle the whole way.
So we are registered. The Small Business Party is registered at a local level to run in any local campaign in New South Wales, so any local government election. We're registered to run in New South Wales at any state election, and we are registered to run federally in any state in Australia.
I'm glad, because we really do need something to help, particularly, you know, with the pandemic and the locking down. You do wonder whether there is anybody with small business experience at all making some of the decisions that are being made. And I'm not saying they're not hard decisions, and I'm not saying that they're not possibly correct, but I just wonder if there's any input coming from all those people whose businesses have just gone down the gurgler on the as a result of the decisions that have been made.
Well, there's not even the respect. So, I mean, please understand, I am what you would refer to as a civic leader. So I don't like to call myself a politician. Right. I know what it's really like on the inside. And there are some amazing people who are in roles in government at lots of levels who really are there to serve the public.
And and you can tell them. You can tell when they're like that, I think.
There are hardworking people.
This is not across the board that they're all baddies.
But they sacrifice a lot to do a job for the benefit of the greater good for the long term. Now, that said, there are very few politicians that do that. Not that they don't work hard, but they work hard politically. They work hard within their own parties. They work hard to get themselves re-elected. That doesn't always mean they will work hard for justice.
So do you think that some of them just kind of lose track? They get caught up in the whole sort of political system, I guess, and forget why they're actually there and what they're trying to do or what they started out wanting to do?
Yes. I mean, the short answer there is yes, but also because, again, it's very different once you're on the inside. You know, a lot of us will say, oh, you know, like, he's the Prime Minister, why can't he just do that? It's never that simple to just do something. However, they have the ability to get the best advice. They have
and get laws changed.
To ask questions and consult. It's the decisions that they don't make and the choices that they don't make that shows that they are out of touch and really only wallowing in their own self-preservation.
Right. Okay.
We're going to move away. And I can say that knowing that from the inside.
Yeah, knowing it from the inside. Yeah, that's pretty scary. All right, we're going to move on from politics now just a little bit. You mentioned earlier, we haven't got that much time left, but I'm interested. You said earlier that you had some women who, and you don't have to name names, but who didn't support you in your journey, and that you kind of, I think, implied that they were trying to cut you off at the knees, which I hear about a bit. I'd just love to know if there have been women that have helped you along the way that you kind of, you know, that you can tell us that people have done good things for you. Because in small business land, my experience is that women are incredibly supportive of each other, and that really, that, you know, a lot of the cutthroat stuff is in the corporate sector. But you mentioned that had happened to you. Can you just explain to me a little bit about that?
So I think in Australia we obviously have a thriving tall poppy syndrome, where if we see someone else doing well, we do want to lob, you know, a few shots at them if we can. Whether it's envy or jealousy, it doesn't matter which hat you wear when you're doing something like that. If you can't celebrate someone's genuine achievement, then, you know, the old advice parents give, if you've got nothing nice to say, say nothing.
People don't think of that.
That's right. But when I won the Telstra Business Woman of the Year, the first thing that the other finalist in my category said, it wasn't congratulations. And these were high profile women with huge businesses. And they were just, the first thing they said was, how can a waitress win this?
They did not say that. I'm so sorry to hear that. I mean, you would imagine they would be thrilled for you and for themselves to have got that far themselves. How can a waitress? Well, you weren't a waitress.
But at the end of the day, in their eyes, that is the perception. And that drove me even harder to make sure that I took that award and changed my life, because clearly no one else was going to do it for me. It's another reason why we started SME TV, because there's no mainstream media, I believe, for small businesses to get good, solid, no bullshit information that we need to change our lives. because that's what I want. I want information that's going to change my life. And 3 minutes on someone else's show on another channel that doesn't care about me isn't going to cut it. So again, how hard can it be to build a dedicated small business TV channel?
I'll go and find out.
That's right.
You said to yourself.
So that's what I'm doing now. That's what's driven me. The common factor across everything that I do is always going to be seeking justice for those that have no voice and amplifying the voices of those that deserve it and need it.
Well, I just love everything that you do. I love the idea of SME TV. I hope it absolutely takes off. It's been needed. I know that Koshy's got one that he's set up, Ticker TV has set up, and I'm sure there'll be more. But I absolutely congratulate and want this sort of thing to happen, because I think we need alternatives. And I'm not saying that SME TV is going to be of interest to anyone outside of SMEs, but there are a hell of a lot of us. I think 96% or 90-something percent of Australian businesses are small businesses.
97% are small, 3% are at the large.
I mean, isn't that just crazy that we don't have a lot of mainstream TV?
We employ more than half the workforce in Australia.
So congratulations for everything that you're doing. I'm so thrilled to have you on the show. Now, Angela, if anyone wants to get hold of you, what's the best way to do that?
Well, it's my mobile number and my email address are very public thanks to media across the years, and I haven't changed any of them. But the best email to get me at is news@smea.org.au. The YouTube channel's got all the details. I'm very easy to find on LinkedIn and any other social media platform. If you can't get me, then a lot of other PR people have failed in their job, Jules.
Okay. And of course, you should all subscribe to SME TV.
Thank you.
Well, particularly if you've got a small business. But if you're interested in it or you're thinking about setting up a business, it's also great. Now, the other one that I would love you to subscribe to is the She's the Boss channel.
Done that.
Thank you very much, Angela. If you like what you're seeing today, then I'm putting out 2 TV shows a week. We've also got podcasts on the channel and my old shows that used to be on Ticker TV, She's the Boss, interviewing female founders, are also on the YouTube channel. If you go to shestheboss.com.au, I'm also holding weekly Zoom lunches for female founders, and you will meet some absolutely amazing women. And I would love you to come and join us. So I hope you've enjoyed the show, and I look forward to seeing you on the next one. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. Another big thank you to our sponsor, Brand for Brands Agency. To find out more about Brand for Brands, go to brandforbrands.com. To watch this or any other episodes in this series on video, go to the She's the Boss YouTube channel. And to find out all about She's the Boss, how we are making female founders more visible and lifting up the women around us, go to brand4brands.com. To watch this or any other episodes in this series on video, go to the She's the Boss YouTube channel. And to find out all about She's the Boss, how we are making female founders more visible and lifting up the women around us, go to shesthebossgroup.com.